Okay, sorry about that interruption. So, Noble Eightfold Path. An interesting fact that I mentioned because it'll help us to understand the evolution of the teaching of Buddhism. Originally, as I stated, the Eightfold Path only led in Theravada Buddhism to arhatship. But as Buddha taught in future stages, insight or prajna became the central soteriological instrument, leading to a different concept of the Eightfold Path, because then, when insight became important, suddenly the Eightfold Path opened itself up to leading the aspirant, the practitioner, to bodhisattva states, which he could then transcend and actually achieve the Buddha life condition in this lifetime. This is the Lotus Sutra. This is what we practice here. And so I'm going to get to that. It's a very exciting development in Buddhism. Right now, I'll just go over the eight aspects of the path, just so we have this discussion. And it's important to have. Remember, this basically comprised the meat of the practice of Buddhism for hundreds of years. And there's still sects out there to where this is it. And it's important for you to know this. Right view, we've already talked about our actions have consequences. Death is not the end, but just the other side of birth in an endless process of life. Our actions and beliefs have also consequences after death and their dissipation into the quiescent whole. It wasn't until later in his teachings, and I wish I could give you a specific sutra, it's not coming to mind, but at any rate, when prajna became central to the process of enlightenment, that's when they folded karma, causal chains, nidana, and rebirth, and the importance of the Four Noble Truths into the Eightfold Path. That's huge, all right? And we've already covered it. Right intention could also be called right resolve. For the monks, it meant giving up home life, living in a monastery and so forth. But it also applied to nyūdō, like me, or bhikshus, monks that lived amongst the people. Lay people, just lay practitioners. At first it didn't. At first it was strictly for the practice of monks, but later, after Hinayana, for the layman, a right view, this factor has two levels. At the mundane level, the resolve includes being harmless, not causing harm, and refraining from ill will to any being, as this accrues negative karma and leads to rebirth. At the supramundane level, the factor includes a resolve to consider everything and everyone as impermanent, a source of suffering, and without a self or intrinsic nature. Ta-da! Haven't I already shown you that? So you already know this. So that's why I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. And as I've said several times throughout this series, if you get this meat, if you get 3,000 realms in a single moment, and Ichin and Sanzen, and you understand from quiescent energy to this incredible network of causal chains that come to manifest sentient beings and reverse the process as we go back in, then you're not going to have trouble at all with any of the Buddhist concepts, because it's all about that. And in a simple way, living a life of wonder and joy and stability and security is basically staying awake and aware of that as the real reality instead of getting sucked in to our desires, avarice, cravings, our monkeys. If we just quiet them down and understand what we've already talked about is constant. Look, if somebody's pissing you off and you suddenly think, oh yeah, he's not permanent. He's not a real thing. He's not an enemy. You know, of course there are exceptions to this. When somebody's wielding a sword at your head, I'm not saying stand there and go, well, the sword's not real, so I'm going to be fine. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the processes at work. And if you understand the processes at work, you may be able to get out of the way and resolve the problem with the guy with the sword in a much more efficacious and life-affirming manner that saves your butt and educates him, instead of reacting with your monkeys and picking up a rock and killing him. You see the difference? One is aware of what's really going on. The other is just reacting in kind. And all that's going to do is create more suffering for you and everyone. Okay? Right speech, no lying, no rude speech, no telling one person what another one says behind them, no gossip, no misleading, no manipulation. That's the world of anger. Right conduct or action, don't kill. I mean, these are pretty obvious. Some of them are more subtle. That's why I'm going through them. No injury, don't take what's not given. No sexual misconduct. The prohibition on stealing in the Pali Canon is an abstention from intentionally taking what is not voluntarily offered by the person to whom the property belongs. This includes, states Bhikkhu Bodhi, taken by stealth, by force, by fraud, or by deceit. So a little more, any manifestation of that is wrong. Right livelihood. Basically, you shouldn't be doing anything for your livelihood that brings about suffering of other beings. You could take that to mean that you shouldn't sell guns or weapons, because there's no other purpose for a weapon than to injure another person. So don't make that your livelihood. Don't make your livelihood trafficking in humans, prostitution, slavery, anything like that. Don't traffic in intoxicants. That's a big one. You see, Buddhism, all of Buddhism is about sharpening our perception, deepening our ability to understand, unclouding the mind. So obviously anything that clouds the mind is a big no-no. What are you doing, right? You're not being Buddhist. You're not practicing Buddhism. So that's under livelihood. That's also could be under, these are labels, eight labels, but they transmute through one another all throughout here. Now we get to the final three. Remember, that's about samadhi. It's about absorption, complete union with the thought, as I said earlier, to quiet, to calm, to set, cease the body formation, that whole chain. Right effort, then, is to guard against sensual thoughts. In other words, thoughts that put you into craving modes, desirous modes. You know, don't go walking by, what's that cheesecake, the Cheesecake Factory. Don't go out of your way in the mall to walk by the Cheesecake Factory to look and smell and see, when you know all that's going to do is arise all of your desires for sweets and heavy foods and these desserts. Why are you torturing yourself? Just avoid it. You see, this is the lie. I'm not trying to. Maybe you like cheesecake and it doesn't bother you. Fine. I'm just using an example to illustrate that effort is required of you to avoid what can precipitate deeper desires, deeper cravings, things that will cause more suffering. Right mindfulness. Well, mindfulness, I mean, that could mean any of 100 things. But after everything you've heard me say in these last few videos, mindfulness is about remembering everything I've talked about. It's about remembering that your wife or your husband or your boyfriend isn't saying that specifically to hurt you. He may be thinking that as a human, but he's got to look at his own cause making and try to understand why he's lashing out. But you understand that that's a process that he's not handling well, and he needs maybe your help in calming his cravings and his boo-boo monkeys in his head so that he can handle whatever it is that's frustrating him and causing him suffering, that's then causing him to react the way he is. And you need to do this as well for yourself so that you don't go, oh yeah. Okay. You need to go, oh, stop, stop. Let's just take a breather. Let's walk around the house once. Let's try to understand what it is that's hurting us so badly. And I hope you have a partner you can do that with. Believe me, this is so difficult for us to do for ourselves. Imagine in a relationship how difficult it is to do with a partner. It's tough, I'm telling you. This is why we're talking about effort and mindfulness and then right concentration. Because if you can focus your mind, really concentrate on this truth, the truth that everything is impermanent, that everything about you, as well as everything in your environment, it's a blip in time and it's not real. I mean, I have to be careful about saying not real. I apologize. It's real as a precipitation of karma, of all these causal chains. It's real in that sense because you experience it with your human faculties, mind and memory and epistemology. But it's not real in the bigger picture of the life process. It's just this intermittent struggle to calm the very things, the very processes that made it possible for us to be sentient beings. It's almost contradictory, but it's just like developing a new sense. You develop a sense of yourself that lets you know that this existence as a human is just for you to observe and enjoy. Suck the marrow out of it. And that is true for every single thing around you, from the dog to the grass to the tree to your neighbors. To the guy who just ran into the back of your car, to water, everything is like this. And if you really can hold on to that truth, then reality is a piece of cake. Okay? I think after this talk, you should be able, all of this is going to become one great big thing. And I'm going to introduce you to the ultimate teaching that Nichiren discovered. And we're going to talk about what Myoho Renge Kyo means. Probably the first time you're going to hear it the way I'm going to explain it. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Because if you get everything that you got so far, Myoho Renge Kyo is going to be like, whoa, so easy. Anyway, I really love that you participating in this and you're listening. Please give me feedback so I know I'm not just talking in circles to myself. I know you're watching. I see the views, and I truly appreciate it. Be happy. Live well. Let's do Sancho, and we'll end this particular lesson and look forward to the next one. Thank you once again. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.